This is us learning in public, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We're at Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We are literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala.
This is Seen.
Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections. On our podcast, we spend a lot of our time talking about power, systems of power, power over, empowerment. You get a theme going yes. into power, you know? And we do this so that we can all get attuned to the ways that nuanced interactions between people and systems actually operate. When we understand power, we understand who has none of it, who has all of it, and why. Mm-hmm. I know we've both alluded and have given mention to racist experiences we both had, but today's episode is getting particularly deep with respect to anti-Black racism, which is different than racism. It's very particular.
Yeah.
And I think in line with an episode that we recorded last time on health, specifically disability and chronic illness, this is another topic area where we don't really share the same proximity to it at all.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I experience the effects of white supremacy, but anti-Blackness, that's not something that I'm targeted with at all.
Totally. So before we dive deep into this, I want to check in with you. What your, you know, what's your status for this topic of conversation, how you're feeling, particularly as a non-Black person of color who has a lot of vested interest in Black culture, Black people, like enjoying hip-hop music, friends yeah. with me. Where, I guess my question is, what's your entry point into this conversation? Because I think you bring a perspective that is really important in from the listening perspective.
Yeah, I'm really excited that we're going to be talking about this because... when I first started learning about racism, I didn't know about, you know, the specificities of it.
Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, yeah, we all experience racism. And it took a long time to start to recognize and hear from people what the specificities are of anti-Blackness in particular, and to realize that not only am I not targeted by anti-Blackness, in some ways, as a non-Black person of color, I can be used to further anti-Blackness.
Absolutely.
So it's so important for me to be intimately aware of how anti-Blackness works so that I can not only do my best to fight it and to not perpetuate it and not be used to perpetuate it. I think that's really important too.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who loves Black people first and foremost, and who has benefited endlessly from Black art, Black culture, and like the work and leadership of Black people, it's so, so deeply important to me to do the best that I can and do as much work as I can. And yeah, I hope that that I can maybe be a voice for the other people who are trying to do that work or who invested in that work, the same way that you were in the health episode. You were the voice for the people who wanted to learn more. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm totally. Really excited to like hear what you have to say and
great.
Talk to you about it.
Because I'm going to say some shit today.
Awesome.
And it's interesting because when I was writing this and preparing for this and thinking about it, I was getting very emotional just prepping for it because alongside, you know, sexualized violence, anti-Black racism has been, those two things have been, you know, two of the most powerful forms of violence in my life and power over in my life.
Mm.
And so I think it's really important that, like, as a starting point, we recognize that anti-Blackness is not a theory or a feeling. It is a finite, tangible, objective fact that most, if not all, Black people expect to wade through as we live in predominantly white societies. I can think back to probably my first experience in what I now know as, well, I mean, at the time, it was definitely anti-Black racism, but I was, I think, in the third or fourth grade, and a boy in my class called me a nigger.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't understand, because my parents, you know, my family is Kenyan. I was born, like, my sisters and I were all born in Canada. My parents didn't really have to have the same conversations that I think a lot of Black folks who are aware of the culture in North America have to have with their kids. So I wasn't prepped with, you know, people are going to say these things to you or whatever. I knew I was different, very much so, because I had braids and all my classmates didn't. And I was, you know, people make comments about my dark skin and those things had come up, but nothing as explicit as somebody literally just calling me the N-word. And I didn't really understand what it was that he was saying, but I knew that the word was really bad. And the way that he said it was sort of smug and defiant, and like it was supposed to hurt me.
Yeah.
And that's how I knew, like, this is not a word. And the way that everyone else was responding to him saying that, or, you know, even I think there was like a rumor that he said it, and everyone was like, oh my God, like, that's so bad that he would. And that became more of the, like, the rumor became more of the thing than me actually being called a nigger.
Wow.
Right. And so, yeah, I think, you know, I also have mentioned throughout many of our episodes, and in our first episode specifically, that reoccurring dream I had when I was little and dreamt of being a little white girl, and then the impact that white European beauty standards have had on my ability to see myself as beautiful and worthy as a black girl, and then to this day that still affects me as a black woman. I definitely mentioned on the podcast how, you know, expressions or displays of anger that I have are definitely mediated through whiteness, especially in public spaces, whereas white men are able to hold space in ways that I'm not able to, or express their anger and frustration without the same fear of being over-surveilled, policed, killed, have the cops call on them, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I've definitely talked about, you know, experiences with dating, like previous experiences with dating white men who sexualize my black femininity in ways that are disgusting and degrading and take away from the most beautiful parts of my identity as a black woman, and stereotype and vilify or exoticize or all those things that really detract from me being a fully intact person. So basically what I'm saying is, like, there's receipts. Y'all not new to this shit. I've been talking about this stuff for a very long time. But I think for this episode, I want us to get deeper so that when I say anti-blackness and you hear this word, it's crystal clear in your mind what I'm talking about, and when black people are talking about it too. So I want to share some examples of what anti-blackness looks like and why it is so goddamn dangerous for black people, and more broadly, how it's used by white and non-black people of color to uphold white supremacy. And of course, I want to close things out by offering sort of ways that we can care for black folks, because at the end of the day, even, you know, if you as a non-black person of color or a white person aren't necessarily acting in overtly anti-black ways, I have air quotes around that, you benefit from anti-blackness, you profit off of anti-blackness, you stand to gain from anti-blackness, and now more than ever, you need to be responsible for how you perpetuate it as a non-black person. So
100%.
Right? So Ahmed Olayinka Sule, in an opinion piece for The Guardian titled "Racism Harms Black People the Most, It's Time to Recognize Anti-Blackness," states this, and I think it's really important. So they say, a key step in bringing anti-blackness to the forefront is by developing a working definition. This could cover caricatures, stereotypes, disparagement, the perception of black populated countries, and the trivialization of the transatlantic slave trade. As a precursor, there needs to be buy-in from governments, regional bodies, international organizations, academia, and the global black civil society. So I guess from jump, I just want to begin by attempting to define anti-blackness, because I want this to be understood, basically.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of people who still don't fully grasp what that shit is. So case in point, we can start from recently somebody's homegirl, Gina Rodriguez.
Oh, God.
Gina. When are you just gonna just stop crying your non-black people of color tears about how much you don't hate black people? Because she says the N-word on an Instagram story, posts it, then takes it down and says something like, if you were offended by this, I'm sorry. And then takes that down.
Wait, it was worse.
Okay.
Sorry if you were offended by me singing a song that I love.
That I've always sang for forever.
I grew up with.
I love the Fugees.
What
are we talking about?
Oh.
So, and it's like, you know, her crabby non-apologies. And then she finally posted something, which is still available on her Instagram, because she's blocked all comments on all of her pictures. It's hilarious. Her post said something to the effect of, you know, her being committed to communities of color. And I was like, bitch, just say black. You can't even say black. And I think from this, we need to talk about the fact that, like, even today, there's a lot of black folks who don't want to fuck with the people of color blanket, who don't think we need to fuck with people of color because of shit like this. And so
I think it's really important that you brought that up, because when she said, you know, the community of color is so important to me. It's like, that's it right there. It's not one community of color, right?
Yeah.
And when you're harming a specific group of people, you don't just get to claim this, like, blanket, we're all in this together. Well, unfortunately, we're not, as you just proved, right?
Exactly. And she's been on Sway in the Morning crying about how people
literally
say that she's
crying,
literally
non-black
crying
on
black tears about how people say that people my dad is Latina dad. My dad is, it's like, your dad's not black. Like, and you're not black. And so you need to understand and be responsible for the things that you've been saying. And if you don't know, now you know, look up some receipts about Gina Rodriguez saying some fucking foul shit. But defining what anti-blackness is really important. And that's just one example. Anti-blackness is a natural result of white supremacy, right? White supremacy requires something that has power over, aka whiteness, white people, white adjacent people. And it is of its utmost importance that white supremacy has dominion, power, control over blackness, black bodies, black people. So, I mean, I will say, yes, anti-blackness is, of course, violence against black people, policing, colonization, but also anti-blackness is the control, manipulation, surveillance of black people with the intent of keeping them captive in some way. You know, it's taking away our autonomy, demonizing blackness, black bodies, black aesthetics, black natural states and ways of being. It is the fixation that black people in their natural state doing things that with other black people are inherently suspect and in need of investigation or understanding. It's the obsession with blackness as violent or nefarious or inherently evil. You know, even in the language that we use to describe evil and bad, we use dark, right? We use black. Whereas white is aligned with light and being superior and being closer to God and cleaner and cleansing, you know, all those kinds of things. Anti-blackness is fetishizing. This is like me going in. I'm sorry. I'm so pissed about this shit. Because I feel like people need examples. So I'm going to give you all the examples. Anti-blackness is fetishizing black men and black women and black folks in general and black babies, mixed black babies, because it is dehumanizing and removes any kind of complexity and agency from our identities, making us merely sexed and a sexy objects. Anti-blackness is appropriating black culture as a costume, taking bits and pieces to transcend race, and then discarding and alienating the very creators of the cultural phenomenons that y'all privilege off of all the fucking time, right? Meg Thee Stallion says Hot Girl Summer. Suddenly everybody in their fucking, you know, Wendy's is like, Hot Girl Summer. And the minute that Meg Thee Stallion starts to go trademark that shit, people are like, oh, why can't that? People have been saying that for a long time. It's like, black people create, black women create so much shit. And Kimberly Forrester from For Harriet talks about this. It's really, really beautiful. Go check that shit out. She pretty much talks about how if Meg didn't have the clout and the money and the access and the status that she has currently, she wouldn't be able to do that shit because people appropriate and take from black people all the fucking time and don't give them their shit. Anti-fucking-blackness.
Yeah, and I think that something that non-black people of color often really don't get, and it's something that is so woven into everything you're saying right now, a lot of times non-black people of color, we feel very invisible. And there is this hyper-visibility to anti-blackness that I think non-black people of color sometimes don't understand and definitely don't understand the degree to which it harms black people.
Right.
How the hypervisibility is so key in harming, oppressing, killing black folks.
Totally.
And so I think that, like, okay, not to pick on Gina Rodriguez, although she is the worst.
Nah, we can pick on her.
A lot of us are terrible, so it's not just her, but when she was Black Panther comes out and she's like, oh when is there going to be a Latinx Panther? And it's like, the reason I'm bringing this up, again, it's this example of, oh, like, black people have all the things. And it's like, look a little closer and see that, first of all, black people are creating all of the things. But also that the hypervisibility that you see that black people have, don't act like it's just this some kind of privilege among minorities, when actually it is so much of what the oppression is and so much of what puts black people in way more harm's way than
absolutely
the rest of us.
Absolutely.
As non-black people of
color. Totally. Yeah, it's like people think that being black is lit. It's fucking lit. It's awesome. But there's two sides to a coin, right?
Yes.
Like, it's like blackness is cool. Blackness creates. Blackness is innovative. Blackness is, you know, this beautiful thing that metamorphosizes into something that you didn't even think possible all the fucking time. And people just see that shit and think, I want that. I think that's great. I'm celebrating your culture. But it's like, you know, your point about the visibility piece, because I was going to say, you know, anti-blackness is me getting followed in a Shoppers Drug Mart by you know, an old South Asian security guard.
Yeah.
Like, I'm hyper visible no matter where I go. No one's guessing about my blackness, but they have assumptions about my blackness when I'm moving through certain spaces, that I'm going to steal something. Ask any black person when they're going shopping what they do with their hands. We do this shit with our hands. We, like, we're showing our hands. Our hands aren't in our pockets. Like, shit like that.
Yeah. I've never had to do that when shopping. It's not something that I've learned.
Totally.
I have to do,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. You know, anti-blackness is Asian and Latinx people, and even black people, telling their kids not to sit in the sun for too long or else they'll get too dark. Mm. Anti-blackness is 6-year-old Kaya Roll in Florida getting arrested for acting out in class and literally getting fingerprints and a mugshot taking.
So sad.
It is Tamir Rice getting gunned down. It is Mike Brown getting gunned down. It is Philando Castile getting gunned down. Anti-blackness undermines black people's ability to survive, to be in our own skins without fear or worry that we are doing something wrong. Anti-blackness is nobody giving a shit about Flint, Michigan or Mary Kopenny's activism as a little black girl trying to hold public officials accountable, but the world's endless fascination for Greta Thunberg, who we find to be an inspiration for her incisive address to the world regarding our current climate crisis. In essence, anti-blackness is hella global. It is not relegated to one specific geography. It's not just in North America. It is in Asia. It is in South America. It is even on the continent of Africa itself. Why? Colonization and white supremacy, right?
Absolutely.
And so I was going to say, back to the piece about people of color, this people of color blanket, because I found that I have a friend of mine who moved from Toronto, this black woman. She was like, yeah, you know, in Toronto, we don't have to have this like POC thing because there's a lot of black people that we've been, it's so clear that other people of color don't want to fuck with us or don't want to organize with us or don't think that they need to even stand shoulder to shoulder with us. We just do shit on our own.
Wow.
But at the same time, it's like the Gina Rodriguez is looking towards the things that black folks do and saying like, well, why can't we have our moment in the sun? And it's like, well, we've been doing a lot of the work.
Yeah.
A lot of the work
like,
is
well,
happening.
Then build it.
Yeah.
If you want to see it, if you want to be inspired by it.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a lot of non-black people of color will sometimes want to play the victim or complain about sort of saying, well, why can't we be allowed as insiders into black culture, essentially? Like, oh, yeah. It means so much to me. Like, these are the people I grew up looking up to and we're all people of color. And why am I not allowed to partake as, you know, at the same level?
Right.
There's a lot of reasons for that. Like, first of all, it's just not yours. But I also think we need to really look at ourselves. And if black people feel like, you know, it's not just POC and there's like a reason for us to be separate, I think we need to look at ourselves and say, like, how are we not showing up in the ways that we need to? How are we not being the comrades that black folks need us to be, you know, like, mm-hmm. instead of sort of going mm-hmm. through this, oh, black people are so mean to me narrative. It's
oh,
like,
yeah, we're so mean.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing? How are we not showing up for black people in the way that they need us to?
Absolutely. And so I actually wanted to ask you, as a non-black person of color, why you think it's so hard for non-black people of color to see or identify anti-blackness?
Oh, I think there's probably a lot of reasons. I think one is something you were just saying, that anti-blackness is global. And so anti-blackness is embedded in a lot of our cultures as well.
Hmm.
So I think that is a big part of it, is just a lot of us have bought in. I think there's also this thing we've talked about before, where when you're used to seeing yourself as oppressed, then you don't see the power that you have.
Right.
So it's a lot of like, well, what? I'm not a white person, you know, doing this. Well, I don't see why it matters. Like, we're all oppressed. And there's this real resistance to being able to see not just how we're victimized, not just how we're harmed, but how we perpetuate harm.
Right.
And then I think it's also just very convenient. I mean, maybe it's part of the same thing, but it's very convenient for a lot of non-black people of color because, you know, a lot of us in where we felt very invisibilized or we felt very stereotyped by white people, a lot of non-black people of color leaned on black culture to give us personality or to, you know,
I really do know
give us any kind of like self-esteem or anything like that, you know. And so I think there's a lot that we gain from what blackness has given to us, and so then we're so attached to seeing ourselves as those insiders that we're unwilling to understand how we also harm and perpetuate.
Oh, hell yeah. This is a great segue into a story that I have for you that you've already heard
before.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you. I love story time.
Yeah, me too.
Because you're talking about the ways in which non-Black people of color and non-Black people in general, white folks too, feel like Black culture or Black people help validate or shine a light on their identity or make them feel welcome or make them feel a type of way that something that they're not getting from their
powerful
own. Absolutely. And then you might become so comfortable with that you don't even realize when you're skirting into the boundaries of actually like you're saying fucked up shit in front of Black people.
Yeah.
And you don't even bat a fucking eye. Yeah. So over the summer, I had a really horrible experience.
I thought it might be the story.
It's an important story.
Horrific. Yeah.
It's a very important story because I think I've hesitated to talk about it. And I mean, for many reasons, one, because there's still like a real heaviness in my stomach about it. And I've been feeling like I've been talking to my friend Mariah about this and have been like, I feel like I could have shown up in a different way. Like, should I do something wrong? And she's like, I think you are taking responsibility for something that somebody else has done. So with the story. Anyways, so over the summer, I had this really horrible experience that resulted in the end of a friendship. Basically, it was a friend of mine at the time. It was her bachelorette party and we rented out this house on the Sunshine Coast. And I didn't really know anybody but her. I'd met some of the other folks before, but she was the only person that I really knew, and everybody else like had people. And it was a mix of like white girls and brown girls, like South Asian brown girls. And just getting there, it was a horrendous experience. People offering a ride then bailing. I had to spend like, it was just ridiculous shit that was happening. And for the most part, from peeping in and then looking at the situation, you might be like, oh, everyone seemed really nice and that was fine and it is what it is and whatever. But there was just like a strong sentiment of like, I was so ostracized the entire weekend, and there was just a lot of weird racism happening at the hands of other brown women to each other. It was weird. Wow. And then the brown women like that were there saying the N-word and feeling really comfortable with that around me. And then there was conversations about Black men related to penis size. And I was like, that's really fucked up. That's a stereotype. And she doubled down on it.
Oh my God.
And it was like all the shit happening and me being like super activated for two nights. It was like Nolan's last weekend in town. Mm-hmm. I was super fucking pissed about that. And I was really like uncomfortable the entire time, but I waited until, you know, 2 or 3 days afterwards before I told, you know, that person, hey, I'm not feeling too comfortable about the wedding where I'm going to be in the house with a bunch of these people. Like, I'd prefer to not come to this entire thing. Like, I'd just like to come for the one day. I hope that's okay. And she at first feigned this sense of like care and then asked me more questions. And I told her, like, I just didn't vibe well with your friends. I was so kind about it. I was like,
yeah,
I didn't really vibe well with your friends. And then she's like, well, what do you mean? Like, how could, basically ended up being like, gaslight, gaslight, gaslight. You don't vibe well with people who love me so much. Basically, like, how can you make this about you? And I said to her, this is all via text. I was like, you know, I don't have to explain what anti-Blackness looks and feels like. I've experienced it my whole life. And the response from her was, please enlighten me about how anti-Blackness is made manifest in my friend celebrating my upcoming wedding festivities. And I was like, bitch, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Because the lack of ability, the inability to chew gum and walk. We talk about this all the time on the podcast. Yeah. Is like, you might have friends who are really loving, who are really kind, who have slept with Black men and aren't Black themselves, who in your mind you think that they are saying nothing wrong. But if your Black friend is telling you that they're saying fucked up shit and you're doubling down on their fucked up shit, you're fucking anti-Black yourself.
Absolutely.
You know? So like, let me be perfectly clear, because this story seems to, it makes me so mad, and I still have, like, the gaslighting worked. I definitely still feel like, oh, you know, maybe I should have tried to reach out for coffee and blah, 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 blah. It's like, the bitch took $400 of me from me and has not given it back as well.
Yeah.
Like, I'm obviously pressed and not, I'm not stressed about it anymore, but I'm just like, yo, fuck you. Not only were you trash, but like, your friends were trash, but like, you're also a thieving trash person who's anti-Black. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. So let me be clear that anti-Blackness is not just the overt hatred of Black people. It's very complicated, right? And we have to start realizing that. Folks have to start understanding that when Black people are talking about anti-Black racism, it's not about somebody just calling me a nigger. That's not it. That is it. That is it. Let me be clear. That is it. But that's not the full spectrum or the full extent.
Well, and that's what made me so, I was so not only angry, but also just in disbelief when that was happening, because you literally told this white woman that her non-black friends were saying the N-word and all kinds of other things. And like, as a non-black person, to not say the N-word is like the absolute bare minimum. Like, really?
There's so many other words you can say.
It is almost 2020 and we're still having to talk about whether or not they're saying the N-word.
Begging. We're really begging at this point.
Right? Yeah. Like, it's just there's so much more that we need to be doing and not doing.
Here, I'm so preoccupied by this shit, you know.
Yeah. And that, but they were literally saying the N-word.
Yeah.
And when you said that to her, she was just like, my friends were very lovely. And you said you want to go to the wedding. And she's like, I already took you off the list. I'm like, is this bitch fucking?
She's fucking what? On one. Like, on one.com.
Yeah.
That's the website for her. So. But I think it's important because in situations like that, what I witnessed was the reality of the fact that power is everywhere. Right?
Yeah.
In the same ways that when whiteness enters a room, it changes the people can react or respond to it. When blackness enters a room, it has become a naturalized and very acceptable thing to initiate some sort of concern or like, oh my God, this person's like making the situation. Black people come in this space and it's like, you're the problem. I need to focus on you because like you seem like you have an issue. What's going on with you? Let me make sure that I know where you are in proximity to my body. Mm. Let me make sure that I understand like where you, cause, and also this sense of needing to put black people in their place, mm-hmm. and let them know where they're not supposed to be, how they're not supposed to go, what like, you know, what space they can't take up. I was on the bus like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and there was this fucking, it was me sitting beside this other black woman or femme presenting person, and she was on the inside, I was on the outside. This white man comes and stands in front of us, and the bus is packed. We're like closer to the back of the bus, and he starts talking to this woman across from me, across me. He's like coughing with his mouth open.
Oh,
first of all, I was like, this is disgusting. He talks to this woman, she has headphones, and she takes the headphones out. He says to her, must be nice to be to just be sitting down here, and I am a 65-year-old man with COPD, just like announcing his shit. And I'm like, she starts to apologize. I'm like, no, sir, your COPD, we don't know your business, first of all. Second of all, there are 30 people sitting down in front of us in priority seats. If you need to sit down, why are you not talking to them? Why are you talking to us? Why are we the nuisance here at the back of the bus?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you asking her to give up her seat?
Mm-hmm.
What is going on here?
Yeah.
It's this preoccupation and this fascination and this agenda to make blackness be the problem. And in the situation with this person, I was the problem. It wasn't anybody else. It was like, why can't you just be more chill? Why are you so fucking needy, Nicole?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you just chill? Because they don't mean it like that. They're
right.
Nice girls and you're the mean girl.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I'm laughing because this is the most ridiculous shit, but I know that like this is resonating with black folks.
Yeah. And like you said, the gaslighting is so real. So it actually, even on the conscious level, you know how fucked up it is. And then there's still this part of you that's like, maybe I am the problem. Maybe I am too much, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's so fucked up.
It's super fucked up. And I mean, I don't know what, I always like to think about like, what's the antidote? But like, dismantling white supremacy is the antidote,
yeah,
first of all.
Absolutely.
But in just thinking about tools for the resistance and how we can take care and how we can understand this and show compassion for black folks and hold non-black people of color and white folks accountable for anti-blackness, I think it's really, like I mentioned it before, it's really important to interrogate like how you as a non-black person are showing up and how you are receiving blackness when it comes in front of you, right?
Yeah. And I think I just really wanted to emphasize, So much of what anti-blackness is an overreaction,
mm-hmm.
right? Because, again, it goes in both directions. So there's the people who, there's the policing and the you're a problem. And there's the people who are, like, overly excited and fetishizing and all of those things. The
yes.
overreaction is the anti-blackness. So even if you're like, no, I love black people and I, like, always want to be their friend and talk to them, it's like you still need to stop and interrogate and like always be interrogating in yourself, because
absolutely.
You might still be overreacting.
Yeah. And I think the overreacting piece, when it's not the negative hateful stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it, people are like, oh, I'm saying nice things about your culture or your hair or something to do with your aesthetic physically or something like that, is taking a step back and asking yourself whether or not you are saying this thing so that this person now likes you. Are you saying this because you think this person's going to like you more because you're like, I know a black person. I've heard of a black person.
Yeah.
I fuck with black people. I fuck black people.
Yeah.
Like, where is your ego in this conversation?
Totally.
Because I guarantee you that black folks do not want non-black people to come up to them and be like, I love your hair. I would have voted for Obama too. Like, we don't give a fuck. We don't care. Just like, let us live our lives.
Totally. And it's also, I mean, it's so dehumanizing, right? Because I think that's part of it too, is are you connecting with the person in front of you? And are you aware of how what you're doing is impacting them? And like, are you noticing energy shifts after you say something, how it's landing with them?
Absolutely.
Because a lot of times when the overreaction's happening, even in the positive direction, it's because you're seeing the black person as like a caricature or as a stereotype or through whatever kind of lens,
mm-hmm.
and you're not paying enough attention to them as humans,
mm-hmm.
to see how your behavior is impacting
them. Absolutely. So some questions that you might want to ask yourself as a non-black person looking to interrogate your own anti-blackness is, when I see a black person, what is my immediate response to their presence or proximity to me? When I see a black person, what are the ways I respond to their presence? When I see a black person with natural hair, what are my thoughts? Because I mentioned that it's not just about the hatred. Lala just said it's not about the, oh, I love you, you're so great, I'm it's also about the, like, looking at a black man's hair and saying like, oh, I don't like that, I wish that he wouldn't do that internally.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, anti-blackness is also like this fascination and fixation with trying to control black bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when you see a black person being their black self, minding their own black ass business,
mm-hmm.
if you have the thought that gets to chastising their appearance, how they take up space, even internally, notice those things.
Totally.
Right? Because that's where the under the surface low-key sort of assumptions that you have of black people is playing out.
Totally.
It's not necessarily like at your conscious level thinking that you hate black people.
Totally.
You know,
and I would also add, just from like the therapist perspective, especially the quick automatic reactions. So in a moment where, if you're like walking down the street and somebody like bumps into you, or if there's like a moment that's like tense and you're kind of like angry, you know, like those very quick
responses,
automatic reactions
yeah.
that happen before you even, it's not what you would think if you had time to stop and think about it.
Right.
That's a really good place to find your implicit biases.
Well, that makes sense. And I guess, so anyways, my hope is that non-black folks will take more time to reflect on the shit and the fuckery that's between your ears, because I honestly, I don't know. I can't speak to that shit. I don't know. Y'all.
Yeah.
Like, y'all need to do
it's our
your work.
Like, yeah. And it's something that black people cannot do for us.
No.
And, I mean, obviously shouldn't have to.
Right.
But also literally cannot. This is the shit that we have to find in ourselves.
Absolutely.
And figure out for ourselves, because like our pathologies of anti-blackness, that is 100% our work to figure out.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's also this, it's tough because anti-blackness is also, like I said, it's made manifest across many geographies, even on the continent of Africa, where most people are black. Like, the majority of everybody is black. Like, anti-blackness in colorism, in, you know, the preference of light skin versus dark skin, the connotations that are attributed to dark skin, you know, those kinds of things exist throughout in all of us. So it's really incumbent upon us to be mindful of those things. And I think as a black person, to my black family, to our black listeners, I also want us as black folks to become curious and committed to the ways that anti-blackness is rooted and connected to violence and colonization against indigenous people. Because I think at its root, colonization that has harmed so many indigenous and black and people of color in general, it comes from the same place as anti-blackness, right? It's power over, it's quest to conquer something, it's fear, all of those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to see a lot more solidarity across Indigenous and Black communities, especially in a city like Vancouver, because we have so much to learn from, like, I have so much to learn from Indigenous folks, you know?
Yeah.
I can't say what Indigenous folks have to learn from me, but I think there's just so much that we can learn from each other.
Absolutely.
And so that's my hope and wish and prayer for us, is that we become a lot more invested in understanding, like, when we're talking about, like, decolonizing our minds, we're talking about, as Black folks, as Indigenous folks, we're talking about things that are related to each other, and how do we how do we support each other in that space, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So I wanted to end off with our, well, we call it Women of Color of the Week, but this is Folks of Color of the Week because it's a few people who I find very exciting and cool and are doing awesome stuff. So a friend of the podcast is Cicely Bell Blaine, and they do incredible work. Recently, they had their Stratagem conference at UBC, and it's a diversity and inclusion conference, and it went fucking amazing. And recently, I had dinner with Cicely, and they were sharing some work that they have been doing with Sadie Keene and I think Parker Johnson with the city of Vancouver, and it's incredible. So they've been working on this project to essentially map out anti-blackness, like, geographically across Vancouver to train City of Vancouver staff members to understand, because, you know, there's a whole movement and of diversity and inclusion that we all see is, you know, get in, people like that shit. But I think we need to get a lot more concrete with the words we're using when we're talking about, like, why diversity? What are we talking about? What is it?
Yeah.
And so they're doing this incredible work for us as Black folks to know, and for myself personally, it's been so great to know that this work is being done, even though we don't see it out there flashy and picked up by media outlets and all this shit. Like, the work is being done, first of all. Second of all, it's Black folks having conversations with, you know, non-Black people about this stuff. I think this highlights a big need, and this is incredible work that they're doing, and I want to prop that and say big ups to that. But it's like I'm saying, people of color who aren't Black and white folks need to take the baton. Black folks can only do so much to talk about the things that affect us intimately, right? It's up to non-Black folks to give a shit.
Yeah.
And so I really want to big up Cicely and Parker and Sadie for their work, because in a city like Vancouver, I've said this before and I'll keep on saying this until shit changes, it's hella anti-Black.
Yeah.
It's so anti-Black. And it's not just from white folks, it's from Asian folks, it's from lots of different people in this city. And so I just want to express gratitude because this work is very important. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.